This is the English programme, Time for More, from Villette, by Charlotte Bronte now, the Bronte Boo. Yes, we're on Audio Boo, by the way. I think it's worth mentioning. Actually, it's rather important that I do mention you can go to Audio Boo, get all of our previous episodes of Villette, by going to audioboo.fm/tag/BronteBoo. Now, that is a public tag, which means anyone at all can add episodes to that using the Bronte Boo tag, but at the moment it's only the English program which has used the Bronte Boo tag. So if you go there, you've got all the episodes by us, but there may be from time to time episodes which appear from other people. But if you just want our programs, it's audioboo.fm/English radio. Okay, we're using up our 5 minutes here, so let's start now with part three of chapter two. Seeing that he continued to talk, apparently unconscious of her return, she took his hand, opened the unresisting fingers, insinuated into them the handkerchief, and closed them upon it one by one. He still seemed not to see or to feel her, but by and by he lifted her to his knee. She nestled against him, and though neither looked at nor spoke to the other for an hour following, I suppose were both satisfied. During tea, the minute thing's movements and behaviour gave, as usual, full occupation to the eye. First she directed Warren as he placed the chairs. "Put Papa's chair here, and mine near here, between Papa and Mrs. Breton. I must hand his tea." She took her own seat and beckoned with her hand to her father. "Be near me, as if we were at home, Papa." And again, as she intercepted his cup in passing and would stir the sugar and put in the cream herself, "I always did it for you at home, Papa. Nobody could do it as well, not even your own self." Throughout the meal she continued her attentions. Rather absurd they were. The sugar tongs were too wide for one of her hands, and she had to use both in wielding them. The weight of the silver cream ewer, the bread-and-butter plates, the very cup and saucer, tasked her insufficient strength and dexterity, but she would lift this, hand that, and luckily contrived, through it all, to break nothing. Candidly speaking, I thought her a little busybody, but her father, blind like other parents, seemed perfectly content to let her wait on him, and even wonderfully soothed by her offices. "She is my comfort," he could not help saying to Mrs. Breton. That lady had her own comfort and non pareil on a much larger scale, and for the moment absent, so she sympathized with his foible. This second comfort came on the stage in the course of the evening. I knew this day had been fixed for his return, and was aware that Mrs. Breton had been expecting him through all its hours. We were seated round the fire after tea when Graham joined the circle. I should rather say broke it up, for of course his arrival made a bustle. And then, as Mr. Graham was fasting, there was refreshment to be provided. He and Mr. Home met as old acquaintance. Of the little girl, he took no notice for a time. His meal over, and numerous questions from his mother answered, he turned from the table to the hearth. Opposite where he had placed himself was seated Mr. Home, and at his elbow, the child. When I say child, I use an inappropriate and undescriptive term, a term suggesting any picture rather than that of the demure little person. All right, demure doesn't quite sound right, but we shall go with that, demure. Is that French again? I think we're sort of dipping in and out of the French here, I think. A little person in a morning frock and, oh my goodness, and white chemisette? What's a chemisette? No idea. That might just have fitted. I have to get in touch with the people, the good people, on the Oxford Online Book Club thing that I'm a member of, and ask them all these words. This is the English programme.